to Accent of Women, a show by and about women from diverse cultures and languages right across the world. I'm Fiza, and today I will be sharing snippets of a conversation I had the privilege of having with Dr. Sara Wijesinghe. Sara is a senior lecturer at Sunway University, Malaysia, with expertise in critical tourism, decolonization, and social equity. I met her when I was in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia last month and attended a Women's Day book event held by the radical indie bookstore Gerak Budaya. During the panel, Sara shared about her recent non-fiction memoir, The Illusions of Freedom, which critically examines neoliberal academia and its cultural norms, offering insights into how academic practices influence inclusivity in Asia. Her sharing really resonated with me, and while chatting post-event, I asked Sara if she'd like to continue the conversation for a more global audience, and she very graciously said yes. The conversation you're about to listen to was recorded in an open-air cafe in Kuala Lumpur in the midst of Ramadan. As we waxed lyrical about our experiences of learning the English language as colonized subjects in Sri Lanka and Singapore, respectively, you can just about hear the strains of a Malay Hari Raya song or Eid songs in the background, and of course the general cacophony of daily life. Having now returned to the cool, dry air of April, listening back to this conversation reminds me of that warm, balmy air and the joy of having the company of women from the global majority and the comfort we find in our shared lived experiences. I hope you will enjoy listening to Sara as much as I did. I guess we'll start with what we've been talking about just before. I guess starting from the roots is always a good way, I guess, because our roots are our roots in a sense. You know, it shows us where we go and how we got here. So yeah, maybe start with that.
So I started tracing my own steps as well, and I would say I'm still in the process of doing that.
Exactly,
I don't know
yeah.
everything.
It's an ongoing becoming, right? Which
yes,
is unlearning
yes.
and learning.
That's a good word, ongoing becoming. So yeah, when I was growing up, and this is something that I wrote in the book, that I grew up in the outskirts from the capital city of Sri Lanka, which is Colombo. And it was then in the first 10 years of my life that my father started building his own business.
Okay.
And all of my relatives from my father's side, they were based in different parts of Colombo.
Okay.
So they used to go to schools that my parents thought were the elite schools that you should be a part of. And so at the age of 8, my parents took us out of our home and placed us in a boarding school in
yes.
Colombo
yeah. Yeah.
because they wanted us to be a part of that same circle. And one of their biggest worries at the time was that they don't want their children to not be able to speak English. So that's the first time
yeah.
that this yeah. need for being what do you say, white and Western,
yeah.
kind of dislocated my life.
Yeah, I love that, dislocated your life, yeah.
Surely took me from my home and a boarding school.
Actual displacement,
So that I could go to a school where they teach English.
Where you will learn the right English, not just any English, the right kind of English.
And as I was growing up, it was always this story about why English is so important, and it wasn't just sufficient that I speak English, I also had to speak English in a specific way.
Exactly.
In school, we used to have one period of English a day, and the rest was taught in Sinhalese.
Oh, okay, so the subjects were taught in Sinhalese, it was only English. Okay.
And so my parents felt that, no, I need more time to engage with English, so that again, added to my life in a way that now I had to take tuition classes on top of my school. And just not just tuition classes to learn English, but I was also sent for elocution to learn how to pronounce the English that I was learning.
Yeah, because you talked about is this idea of it's not enough to just speak English, you need to sound English, you need to, and not just any English, the British English.
That brought me and my sister to Colombo, the capital city of Sri Lanka. And so it didn't displace me one time. It displaced multiple, me for multiple years
and,
of my
childhood. And formative years, exactly. Yeah, yes. Your childhood years, not just any. You know.
And as you're growing up, when you're within that bourgeoisie community of the aspirations were such that the successful was defined by this person who goes to a country in the West. And these countries included America, UK, Australia, New Zealand, Canada.
The white countries.
Parts of Europe, all of it. Yeah. So when I started going to this school, I specifically remember that among students, there was there were cliques.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And the cliques were made out of how bougie you were, right? How
of course. Eliteness, the class structure begins early,
And eliteness was not just about income. Mm. Eliteness was also about how Western you were in terms of the language
how you sound,
how you sound, how you dressed, what things you did.
Fascinating, because in Singapore it's the same, right? Singapore, Sri Lanka, it's very similar history, British colonization, and same thing, aspire to a certain kind of Englishness, not just the English language, right? And the same thing where we have I think like how in Malaysia we have Manglish, Singapore we have Singlish, right? The Singaporean English. And it's very, it's a class issue, it's very looked down upon. Like if you're someone who speaks Singlish, or worse, if you're someone who spoke more Malay or more Mandarin or more Tamil instead of English, that's the hierarchy there.
Definitely. Yeah. And I remember when our English teacher used to come for that period of English, it was very wrong if we used any Sinhalese words. Right? So in the classroom, we were made to feel that you must not engage in your native language.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. Like complete erasure. Yeah. Like, you know, you step into that room and there's this, you drop your Sinhalese life out that door in that classroom. You are no longer.
We were not allowed to speak Sinhalese in that classroom. So it was an order. You, it already instills in you this fear. And again, we had these cliques. So the top cliques were girls who, they were girls who went out for parties, who had permission to go to parties. They wore more revealing clothes,
there we go.
And they spoke more. In Sri Lanka, there is this term, posh. There's posh and there's gode. Gode is like the opposite of posh. So gode are the people who speak like, or like the people who only spoke the native languages. The people who
probably dress in their own clothes rather than Western attire.
So they were considered gode. So the posh girls walked around, they had this accent, they laughed at you if you spoke broken English.
Yes,
so,
which is a fascinating term by itself, by the way, broken English, which I find like this idea of broken English. What is a language that can be broken? I find that concept fascinating. No. What do you mean? What has broken it? Is it my native language? Is it my use of it by virtue of me, a non-white person, using the English language? Am I breaking it?
Mm.
What is your language that is so easy to break? Sorry, it's a philosophical tangent.
No,
but continue.
Good, it's good. But at that, those years of my childhood, I didn't understand these politics of language.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just internalized it. I remember feeling scared to speak English in front of these cliques.
It's
a shame.
Yeah.
And then it activates this voice inside of you that always questions you when you're speaking in English.
Yeah.
And I would
Am I sounding right?
That's a voice that I still carry to this day.
Oh, my love, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And so let's say I'm speaking English in front of a native speaker.
Yes.
That voice gets activated, and I'm like, oh my god, I suddenly
understand me?
I suddenly sometimes lose my words. I forget words. I start questioning the structure of my sentences.
Yeah. And because this is a fear you've carried since childhood.
Yeah. It's exhausting.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
It's exhausting.
Exactly,
yeah. Because
you're always bracing. You just
And the reason why you carry that fear is because when I was learning it, I was always made to feel that I don't belong in that. It's the place I have to structure myself to belong.
Fit in, yeah, exactly. Yeah. All these body shape shifting to kind of fit in.
But at the same time, no matter what you do, you're always told that it is still not you.
Not quite right.
It's still not you. Yeah. You can learn it. You can pretend like you're part
pass
of
off
it.
Exactly. You can try and be white passing.
You'll never be
it.
Right? Exactly. So you're always like striving for a standard that keeps moving.
And that you literally cannot ever achieve, right? Mm-hmm. I am literally never going to be, like we said, we are never going to be a white man, right? That's literally, that was the...
You shouldn't even want to.
But that was the end goal that was, you know, taught to us. Not explicitly, they never said you want to be, but everything that we were sold as like, this is the thing to aspire to, was essentially white patriarchy.
Yes. When I was growing up, that was the aspiration. It was not one of the aspirations of a lot.
Everything was shaped towards that, like your education, your dressing,
And so that's the kind of foundation within which I got conditioned. And I also went to a missionary school in Sri Lanka. So that added to it.
You got the tripartite,
You know how it is in Christianity in Sri Lanka as well.
Yeah.
You look at statues where Jesus is white and Jesus has blue eyes. And again, you are in that structure in itself. You're again made to feel like, yes, you can become a part of this, but it is not yours to define.
Exactly.
So all of these aspirations, yes, you may step into it, but it's never yours to define.
Exactly.
And you continue to structure yourself within the systems that you are told to aspire to. You want to as a result of that.
Yeah, exactly, because that's what you were taught. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And then when you step into it, you always have a hierarchy above you that tells you, listen, just because you're in here doesn't mean you belong here. So that was my life. Again, growing up, the aspirations were also those countries.
Yes.
So success was defined on the basis of your presence in those countries.
Yeah.
At first, at the age of 17, my parents sent me abroad to study. I chose Malaysia.
Okay.
And because it still felt near to
close
home.
Enough to home, exactly.
Close enough to be home.
But still English speaking.
And I remember when I came to Malaysia, because I went through a schooling system that was predominantly in my own native language.
Yeah.
So I came into Malaysia and everything was in English. That was difficult for me. And so when teachers were impatient, because they don't have time for students who don't have the grasp in English.
Which is fascinating, right? Because we assume that just because you've learned the English language doesn't mean you know how to talk about math in the English language.
No.
It doesn't mean you know how to talk about science in the English language.
No.
Because you learned English as subject English.
Different.
Exactly. So I can imagine for you, like even schooling system that is English speaking, because that means concepts like canteen breaks or ordering food or, you know, like everything about the schooling life that were in Sinhalese for you before is suddenly now in English, right? And that is a mental process. That's a huge mental processing that needs to happen for a young person.
So it was very difficult and I struggled a lot. I couldn't situate myself in the system so well. So I didn't do well, obviously.
You could not. It wasn't, you were set up for failure.
And it wasn't because I was stupid. I didn't know how to apply myself in a language that stood outside of me. And but when you are in that situation, people don't see that nuance. They see you as someone who is not intelligent.
Not applying yourself enough.
No. Former colonial spaces. English is not simply a language.
No.
It's a marker of intelligence.
Exactly.
100%. Lack of knowledge in it means you're stupid.
You're stupid, as opposed to I don't have English, exactly.
Yeah.
You're listening to Accent of Women, produced in the studios of 3CR in Fitzroy, Victoria, and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. We've been listening to a conversation I had with Dr. Sarah Wijesinghe last month. Sarah is a Sri Lankan academic based in Malaysia, whose critical research on post-colonial dynamics and cultural biases explores how deeply ingrained inequalities impact both societal and institutional settings, including higher education and tourism. Sarah's work emphasizes the importance of uncovering implicit biases and rethinking cultural frameworks that sustain inequality. This week, we are listening to the first half of our conversation as we spoke about the joys and struggles of learning the English language as a child of post-colonial countries and the intertwined nature of language and identity.
I've spoken to many academics from different parts of the former colonies, and I've noted that this is a common reality for many. So even in the current research that I was doing, there were many people who said that when I'm speaking in front of a native speaker, I'm always thinking, can they understand me? Am I using the right words? And etc. etc. They already know if they could not use the language in the best way possible, then that speaker is going to automatically judge them as not intelligent. So when I was growing up, I think this is also common to many kids from former colonies. You kind of sort of end up reading the same English book.
What do you mean? And it's lighter? Because we read it, we aspire to that, right?
You take the cues. Like, it did two things. One, it alienated me. And two, at the same time, paradoxically, it also came into my head as this aspiration.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
This world, this world that is different from my world.
So lovely.
Like, I want I want that world too.
Yes, I want to be part of that world. Exactly. And literature, right? The literature we read in our childhood is so formative. I don't read literature in Malay. Everything I read academically or fiction is in English. And I think that's a loss. You know?
I realized this loss recently. I don't know why it took me so long. When I was growing up, articulation or capability in my native language was not
valued.
It's okay. I mean, if it's there, it's there. If it's not there, then who cares? And so slowly, slowly, because you are reading more in English, you start the my native language has become so slow in my head that now when I read Sinhalese, to read one sentence, it takes me hours.
I think for you it's very different because you were in a boarding school and then you moved here. So Sinhalese was, you know, so became so distant for you.
Because I left home when I was 17 to come study.
That's huge.
And since then, the only person I have actively spoken to in my own language is my parents.
That's a very common story.
With everyone else, it's the common language is English. And so that becomes the dominant. Even my thoughts are now in English.
Exactly. I love that. Like this idea of like, do you dream in English? Right? And I'm like, because we are not just saying like, oh, like as if it's a mere translation exercise. It isn't, right? Because language is discourse. Like the language you have access to is the discourse you have access to. And so that because we were reading not just in English, but we were reading any writing, right? We were reading a very specific kind of English. Those were not just language, it was like words, it was ideas that we were, you know, that we embraced and embodied. And then because we were doing so much of that and not reading, you know, our native literature, what did we lose access to? I think that's the thing sometimes we don't realize. Like, we talk a lot about, you know, how English makes us shrink or things like that, but then we don't realize how we were so lost, like the losses.
I've lost so much because language does not just carry ideas, right? It carries a whole culture.
It's identity, exactly.
And English kind of dictates in a way that it has a very specific way of thinking embedded into the language.
Colonialism and how it, the colonial logics of extraction, of binaries, of hierarchy, of linearity. We learned that through the English language, right? It's a linear language.
Definitely.
It's, you know, it's a left to right, top down, you know, all this.
Language is not language.
No.
I come to realize that the more and more I read. Because language also tells you how to conduct yourself in different situations.
Exactly.
Right? 100%. So in English, for example, you do something wrong and you will be like, oh, I'm sorry, done with the situation.
Yeah, that's it, wrapped up.
But in different languages that are embedded in different cultures, the way you navigate yourself in different situations is very different
That's so
as a
true.
Result of the language.
Yes, yes. Right? That's so true. This, I like that you mentioned like the apology or the, you know, the idea of rupture and repair. Because in Malay, we the whole essence of like the Malay language to me, which I, again, this is something I'm recently, very recently rekindling. Like I've always loved my language, obviously, but I'm really discovering a new love for it, you know, in a way of like of great admiration, not just like, oh, this is something that's mine, I don't care about it. But like, oh my goodness, this is actually a beautiful language. Mm. And one of the core things about the Malay language is this idea of like, we call it berkias. Bila kita berbual, kita berkias. Berkias is like, you don't speak directly. Everything is always like, so you won't just say, I'm sorry, for example, right? You will say like, this thing has happened and this like some people are offended. You won't say who, like, you know, some people would like to say that. You know what I mean? It's very like, I know that for a lot of, you know, because I used to do intercultural studies as well, people find that very indirect, right? They think like, you know, can you just be direct?
That sounds like an English thing.
Exactly. That's the Western culture literally right there. Yeah. But whereas yeah. the Malay language is literally, the whole point of it is to gently bring someone into a space of forgiveness. That's what the berkias does. That's what the layered language does, you know. And there's such beauty in that slowness, in that recognizing that relationships heal over time rather than just because I say two words and therefore it's done.
So especially when I read Ngugi Wa Thiong'o's book, Decolonizing Your Mind, he really prompted me to think about the function of language. Yeah, because oftentimes yes. we tend to flatten it as yes. just this mode of communication.
Another, exactly. Another tool.
You just, and then you learn the words, you learn how to pronounce it, you learn the structure of the language, and that's it.
Yeah.
But no, it functions far more than
that. Oh, 100%.
There's so
yeah.
many layers to what a language does to a person. Like even this example you gave, like two words, I'm sorry, and then yeah. expecting the other person to be okay with everything.
Yeah. yeah.
And then on the other side, it's this whole different phenomena. Imagine being brought up in these two languages. Mm. That would mean that the yeah. way you think about your entitlement in yeah. a situation is very different.
Yeah.
based
yeah.
on where you're positioning
yes,
yourself
the position,
in these
exactly. yeah.
two different cultures of yeah. these two different languages. So it really made me think about the kind of person I have become
yeah.
the result of the language that now structure my mind.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
as we spoke about, it's in yeah. my dreams, it's in our thoughts, it's everywhere,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
The way you perceive everything in front of you,
yes.
the way you perceive
yeah.
your skin situation.
Oh, you name things, right? Your,
yeah.
My labeling system is in English.
Yeah. So it's not just a language, it's very ideological.
Oh.
So yeah, the dangers of language that
exactly,
we don't talk about
exactly.
because we are in such a
we
rush
are, yeah, and we are,
to
exactly.
get our kids to start speaking
yes,
in English.
Yes, yeah, English has become a financially beneficial language. Like, I can absolutely understand why someone would want to learn the language,
so,
you know? You are
yeah,
at a great disadvantage if you don't. Yeah.
It was
yeah.
the same reason my parents felt the need
yes,
to take
exactly.
us out of our home
yeah,
and send
yeah.
us to
a
boarding school
yeah,
just
yeah.
for the sake of learning English and then becoming accustomed to this Western-centric
exactly.
norm.
Exactly. One of my first jobs was teaching language like migrants and refugees, the English language. And it was interesting because they are always asking, am I saying this right? Right, they're checking their pronunciation. And then they will ask interesting things like, would an Australian say it like this? They're not asking to learn the language, they're asking to learn to become Australian. They don't want to just learn how to speak English, they want to speak English like an Australian. And then a lot of it is actually an erasure of their accents, of their native language. So then for me, the challenge became, how do I teach them this language, which I know they need to survive, just simply to survive in that colony? They need the English language. But how do I help them see that it is a language that can coexist with your native language, that it can, it should not and it cannot overpower, it cannot take over your life the way it has with us, I think, if we are honest with ourselves.
And that's all we've got time for today. We have just heard the first half of my conversation with Dr. Sarah, a senior lecturer at Sanwei University, Malaysia, sharing about her own experience of learning the English language and how her work now reconciles with the imperial nature of that language and its impositions and demands that it has made on her Sri Lankan identity. Next week, we will listen to part two of this conversation, where Sarah and I dive deeper into our shared experience of resisting the ongoing colonialism of spaces such as universities and what we can and must do to continue the necessary work of decolonization. Accent of Women is produced in the Melbourne studios of Community Radio 3CR with the financial assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The show is distributed nationally via the Community Radio Network, with special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. Music for Accent of Women was written and produced by George Kunjeri. If you want to hear this show again or any of our previous programs, you can download the podcast from 3CR's website, 3cr.org.au, and go to the Accent of Women page and follow the links to this week's show. If you want to get in touch with the producers of the show, you can write to us at accentofwomen@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, and we will be coming up with an Instagram account very shortly. Thanks for tuning into the program. I'm Fiza, and we look forward to your company again next week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.